I'm Isander.
And I'm Coda.
And today we're going to be talking about the wolves on Fenris. Yeah, the planet's name is Fenris.
This is so... This is Dare Vikings in space.
Listen, I'll be... Yes. You figured it out. Congratulations. Roll credits.
No. It's just so in your face about it.
We will get to that. What matters is it did take some offense when I mentioned that they were not winning in the last episode.
And they decided to win hard?
Not hard. They still almost lost to the Gene Stealers, but, you know... They itched it out. Thankfully, though, that does still mean...
Inched it out. Okay.
What thankfully that
does mean... Well, I mean, if they're, like, dogs, then they probably hit the, like...
Your options are the Gene Stealers, Abaddon the Despoiler, and the Aspect Warriors. You vote by sounding off in the comments. Best ones get made. Least favorite goes away forever until there's a loser's bracket, which there always is. And we will eventually get to it. And that is the poll this time. We also have a Patreon where we have twice as many episodes, a bonus one every single week. We just did one on Bjorn, the Fell-Handed. That was very fun. I like Bjorn. I like Bjorn quite a bit.
Bjorn was fun.
It was going to be Logan originally, but I'm saving him for a different day.
Again, I'm still not convinced that that's not a Wolverine reference.
No. It's just cool. I mean, the name Logan is just cool.
It's really
cool. For all the Logans watching, you've got
an awesome name.
That's a good name. Like, yeah. Logan just works. So, no, I don't think it's a Wolverine reference per se, but it is just a good name. Regardless, yep, there's that episode as well as a bunch of other bonus episodes that you can find all on there. We've done... almost every topic under the sun, including that's where the Slaanesh episode resides, because Lord knows it could not reside on YouTube. That's just not how that works. So if you want to head up, if you want to get all of that, as well as a bunch of other perks while helping us keep all the lights on, then you can head on over to patreon.com/IsanderandCoda, where you can get more of what you already love. Because I know there's a ton of you who've binged everything here and want more.
And we do need more lights.
Yeah, we do. We have very different lighting needs, fun fact. That's why he looks like a sheet of paper sometimes. Oh, our audio listeners won't get that. But yeah, sometimes he is like fully overexposed, and sometimes I am like a DLC character that's not been unlocked yet. And it's genuinely hard to balance the two lighting needs we have, fun fact.
Well, I was going to say, I would love to get a little bit more color in here. Let's go like every other video essayist on the entire YouTube space and get some weird bisexual lighting going on in here.
No, just function. I'm so function over form. Function. More better lights for all of us. Regardless, let's get into it. And again, for those of you that don't know, for those of you that may be new, I take the perspective that is the single most flattering for the Legion, or whatever I happen to be covering, because I'm of the opinion that every faction deserves its own hype man. And so I have descended from the heavens as a state-mandated hype man for everyone.
You're the hype man chameleon.
Yeah, despite how I feel about them, I will always take the most flattering angle. This is important, this episode, because the wolves are one of those where by taking the most flattering angle for them, you're going to take a pretty mean angle for other ones. And so, if you're a Thousand Suns viewer, I'm sorry.
Viewer discretion advised.
Yeah, just a little bit. The wolves are a bit of a paradox, though. It's not all stomping on the Thousand Suns. It is...
It's just a lot of that.
No. It's simple up front, honestly. Space wolves. You figured it out immediately. You know their whole shtick. It's Vikings in space, and they're massive augmented humans. You know. But the problem is, there are two more layers on top of it. I mean, there are some consistencies to it, but there is the occasional where they're portrayed, which is sometimes they will pillage and ransack everything and everyone, like they're hounds that just got released from their leashes. It's really messy. They do the whole Viking routine of burning the village to the ground. They drink like frat bros and attend every single con without fail. That is one side of them and how they're shown. Other times, they give a salamander their run for their money. Right?
Like, they go from ransacking and pillaging to just dude bros?
Yeah, not even dude, like... They will outright sacrifice themselves for civilians sometimes.
Huh.
Which, really counterintuitive to the drunken frat bro, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's this odd thing that I have not yet figured out why. I've only able... I've only been able to discover that it seems to be post and pre-heresy, for the most part, is how it seems to be organized. So what we are going to do, since it's almost impossible to wrangle everything that makes the wolves, because some people prefer the people riding into battle with a six-pack on their shoulder and a wolf the size of a horse, and other people like the noble Viking warrior who's very introspective and will help people, you know? I cannot make those two work into the same person because they're kind of not.
They're really not.
They're very much so not the same person. So what we will do is we will cover what they all have in common, because they do have some things in common. We'll call it more violent side, and then their kinder side. And then, you know, for those of you that like the violent, you know, the usual routine, you can go there. For those of you that like the more kind variant, the more introspective warrior kind of thing, that's more the wolf you're going to like.
Space wolves have something for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the thing about them is most legions have a specific way they behave. It's very cohesive, you know? Like an ultramarine, there's 101 ultramarines, but they all file their taxes accurately and on time. You know,
they have that one thing in common, exactly. At least.
And you'll look at other legions, and even though there are these chapters that seem like they'd be at each other's throats, they do have a couple of threads that tie them together.
They have at least one unifying factor.
Exactly. The wolves don't even have that many successor chapters. They have like two.
Really?
And they're that different.
Okay.
Yeah, there's quite a big gulf that do I they have at least to bridge.
Have the single thread joining them?
The wolf bit, yeah. That's the single most common. Let's start with their commonalities, which is the wolf bit. In
yes, that tail is real.
What I was going to say is, if you were to take a shot every time I said wolf this video, you would be about a quarter of the way as drunk as they can get. Don't do that. You will die. But they commit to the bit a lot. And that's actually a fun fact about them. They are the only, they're the only legion that bothered to find a way to get drunk.
They're the only drinkers.
Yeah, well, because Space Marines have really, really augmented internals. And one of those things is it lets them do very odd things, such as, but not limited to, spit acid, eat brains, and get all the memories. There's a lot of wacky stuff going on under the hood of a Space Marine. One of them is outright immunity to poison, because I'll be honest, alcohol is nothing but slightly poisonous liquid bread.
Yeah.
So regular alcohol is water for them. I mean, you could feed a Space Marine straight sewage and he'd process it. They're very effective at their jobs.
And if they can eat that, what do you think your 80-proof whiskey is going to do to them?
Nothing. So the Space Wolves have persisted and created a brew so strong it would kill a normal man like 10 times over.
It's like 2,000 proof.
I'm surprised it doesn't vaporize the moment they open it. It's I don't think you can store it in regular wooden casks.
They drink pure liquid fluorine.
Borderline gasoline. It is sketchy. It is sketchy, but it gets them drunk.
I wonder if they could actually, like, because there's that joke of there's like, what is it? A couple thousand calories in a shot of gasoline.
They could probably process.
Process that.
Yeah, it can make Primarchs drunk. Because it made Gilliman loose for the first time ever, and then he went back to being a rigid square. So
how,
you know,
sturdy do you think he got?
Fairly, I would say fairly. But this I'm gonna call it a brew. But for everyone not a Space Marine, poison is present at all their feasts and all their gatherings, because they're very big into this. Is one thing that they all have in common is crafting a saga. It's a whole thing. It is your journey as a warrior, right? And this is one of the things that helps. It's a commonality between the two variants of Space Wolves you have, because you can have a hell of a saga being the guy there for every human being ever, no matter what, and winning despite the odds. Or, let me not use that finger, being the guy who burned the most villages down alone.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at old Viking sagas too, it's kind of the same thing. You either have the dude who is there, very there for his buds, or
Every Space Wolf has a saga, and it varies in length, and it's usually told during these feasts or at their death, with the biggest and greatest of all the sagas being Lehman Russ's.
Because of course it is.
It's Dad's. It's Dad's. This isn't his episode, but you always have to bring up the Primarchs because the Primarchs serve as a blueprint for every single Space Marine Legion. So if you understand them, you can understand the rest of the bunch. He is, the quick spark notes, he did the usual routine that a Primarch does, landing, crash landing Superman style on a world. That's what they all did. He didn't land on... Look, there's no two ways about it. Fenris is a death world.
Ah.
It is a classification of planet that is not uninhabitable. That's different.
But it's pretty damn close.
No.
Really?
No. Uninhabitable is a higher ranking, in my opinion. Because death world means... Uninhabitable means it's incompatible with life. Death worlds are actively hostile against it.
Ah.
There's a difference between I can't sustain this and I'm trying to strangle this. And that's what Fenris does.
Frightening.
It is this unending tundra that is one continent, vaguely, but that's Pangaea. It's kind of a Pangaea situation.
A little bit of Pangaea.
But it can get so cold that the entire surface will freeze over.
The entire surface.
Yeah. And then, if that's not bad enough, they have tons and tons of geological activity. So if it's not just frigid beyond belief and everything's frozen solid, volcanoes are erupting constantly, melting everything, and islands are being shaken apart. That's not a joke. There's one Pangaea-style continent, and there's a bunch of islands smattered around, but you don't want to live there because they regularly get shaken apart.
They just blow up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not great. And if you happen to find a piece of land that is both solid and unshakable while not being frozen, congratulations. You now have to deal with the Wolves of Fenris, which are the size of a full-grown warhorse and hunt in packs with mouths big enough to eat a man.
Frightening.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But, you know, land's scary. I get that. I don't want to have to deal with that. So you can set sail. There is water. It does thaw.
Well, isn't it? It's mostly ice.
No. You can set sail.
Okay.
Yeah. It's compatible with sea life. Like krakens.
Cool.
With tentacles that are actually miles long.
You know what? Actually, I'm real. Hold on. Do we have like a Moby Dick situation going on here? Please tell me there's like a Space Wolf Ahab story.
Oh, there probably is, but I couldn't find one.
If there isn't, Games Workshop. I know you're listening.
And also, I mean, the Space Wolves would totally have an Ahab, so I'd be there for it. I love how these things are described because you would just be sailing, and then the water beneath you will go pitch black.
Frightening. Nope. Get me out
of
here.
As far as you can see, by the way. Like I said, tentacles, 4 miles. It's a death world.
Which means you at least have a kraken with the body the size of like a city block.
Yeah, it's a rough place. To put it very mildly, it's a land ravaged by ice and fire, and it's so fitting for them because that duality is reflected in them every single day. Lehman Russ landed there and was quite literally raised by wolves. Not a joke. It's here he would gain many of his names, like the Lord of Winter and War, the Wolf King, Lemon Rush, you know? And my favorite title, the one I will always bestow to him, the most inconsistently drawn Primarch. You will see when you are finding art for this. He oscillates violently between obscenely hot to could star in a L'Oreal commercial today to furry bait. To furry bait, to a fridge with fangs. And it's not era dependent. It's not artist dependent. Lehman Russ does not have a consistent art style in a way that few Primarchs don't. And it really bothers me, man.
Lehman Russ is whatever you want him to be.
Pretty much. The most consistent ones I see are him. Personally, the one I like is him where he's obviously an attractive guy. But he's mangy, if that makes sense. You know, like he's still got the fangs, obviously. And he's got long hair that's braided, right?
Yeah.
But it's not perfectly braided. You know, it's slightly unkempt.
The one that I saw that I like really liked had him looking like a Viking Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, he's a little
That's a sentence and a half, but yeah, pretty much.
He's a bit grungy. He's got the wolf teeth. But, you know, the braids are nicely done, and he's got, like, the cuffs on his braids too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So long as Russ looks like he could get into a fight and his general appearance wouldn't change very much, that's a believable variant of Russ. It really is, because the guy's the Emperor's executioner. He puts in work very regularly. So long as it's functional, I'm okay with it. It does wildly vary, though.
Yeah.
It's disturbingly so. Regardless, this isn't about him. You know how this goes by now. A Primarch shows up on a planet, they unite it all. There's a little bit of strife, but not really, because the Primarchs solve all their problems.
It's just enough strife for a Primarch to solve.
It's just enough
strife. And then you move along.
It's just enough strife to make a book that you can read. That's usually how this works. but the Emperor does hear about this, and you can tell. You can tell. There are things that Primarchs are so good at that even he's like, okay, well, that's
okay, fine. Well, that has to be one of my kids. Yes.
I love the way the Emperor arrived to see him, though, because he's the Emperor's a showman and a half, man. So he shows up in the guise of this beggar, like, total hunched over, loses half his footage, effectively, and, like, shrinks into this potato sack before revealing himself as a master of mankind, and all will bow before me. To which Russ says, prove it.
Nah.
Yeah, pretty much. And challenges the Emperor to multiple feats, starting with an eating contest.
Of course.
The Emperor loses. A drinking contest that the Emperor loses, which, by the way, we haven't done an episode on the Emperor. He does not lose often. And Russ just gave him the back-to-back. So at this point, the Emperor is a little frustrated. Like, don't get me wrong, the first time, okay, cool, this is what you're good at. The second time, no.
No, 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 no.
He outdrank a man who walks into the room and you smell ozone.
Yeah.
Like, he's really powerful.
He would need to drink liquid ozone to get drunk.
I'm not even sure how he won that contest, but he did. And the last one, Russ isn't the sharpest tool in the shed. There's this thing you can do where it's called taking your win and leaving. It's very frustrating. One of my friends does this all the time. I hate him for it. You basically win once, and then you fold it and call it a day. That's it. I've won. Mauled, cope and seethe. I'm never playing again.
I got my dub. I'm dipping.
He's literally uninstalled games over this. And as you can tell, I'm still not over it. It's the most infuriating thing you can do. No rematch, no nothing. Just bye, done. Yeah, horrific behavior. I'm kidding, obviously, but it is a very valid thing, knowing when to quit when you're ahead. And that guy really knows how to quit when he's ahead. Like, really. Russ does not. And after going back to back, he then challenges the Emperor to a proper fight.
He's not winning this one.
It does not go well.
No.
Do we even need to go over this? It does take hours, though, because they're both competent fighters.
Yeah.
Primarch fights do take a while. That's just a known. But he does lose. My favorite thing about him, though, is while he may not know how to quit while he's ahead, very important thing to know, he does know how to take a loss on the chin. Because he just laughs and goes, yeah, you're my dad. Moving on. Like that right hook was too good. That was I know when I'm beat. And that's a whole skill. I would say learn to quit while you're ahead, because that's a very big one. Or alternatively, learn how to smile when you lose.
He was the very no, I know this person is not real. He's the very gracious Rainbow Six Siege player where he got like corner shot, right? Mm-hmm. And then smiled and said, oh, nice shot.
You've never played a minute of Rainbow Six Siege.
Like I said, this person doesn't exist.
You've never played. I'm sorry.
I've seen enough clips to go, oh, yeah, this would irritate most people.
My brother in Christ, you have not started a game with a smile on your face and then see a tiny bit of a 2-4 get knocked out and then you die before rapidly hearing every pejorative in the English language thrown at you by your teammates.
No, I've seen enough clips of Siege to know this is not a pleasant time.
It's not.
That's why I said this kind of person who goes, oh, nice shot, doesn't exist.
It's a myth. It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
Yes. So at this point, after he wakes up from being knocked out stone cold, he goes to forge a saga across the stars and does so very, very successfully. You can see where the wolves get a lot of their stuff. You can see them get this love for deeds and feats before almost anything else. It's cool. Very nice. You're effective. But what have you done? It's a very big thing they love.
Space Vikings.
And this is shown almost immediately when you try and join the Space Vikings, because you are taken to their fortress known as the Fang.
Dude, I love Warhammer.
Get it out of your system.
I love 40K names. Dude, I love 40K names.
Yeah, listen.
They're either so stupid and edgy, but like in a cool way, or they're just so on the nose that it's uncanny.
Yeah, well, I have to put this note in. Part of why they're so on the nose could be because they were butchered in translation, in canon, to high, like the language they speak on Fenris was not translated properly to High Gothic, which is what everyone else speaks, which is why when we read about, well, it's not even when you read about wolves, but when you speak about the wolves, you just hear wolf, wolf, fang, canine, wolf, wolf, Fenris. That's all you hear over and over again. But that's a poor translation because they don't even call themselves the Space Wolves.
What do they call themselves?
The Vilka Fenrika. I think I said that right.
Sounds like it could be very close to the Warriors of Fenris.
We have Nordic viewers, so they'll correct me if my pronunciation is wrong.
Oh, is that like actually Nordic?
It's close enough. I don't think so. it translates to, you were correct, the people of Fenris. Roughly is what it translates to. And again, in the books, it's not so thoroughly mentioned. You don't hear wolf, wolf, wolf. Usually they go by title, like Jarl, mm-hmm. or the person's name. And they even admonish the new kids for calling them space wolves, because no, we're not that. We're the Vilka Fenrika. That's what we are.
Remember, we came from Fenris.
Exactly. It's they treat the space wolves as the name for the outsiders. Like, that's what they call us, but that's not what we call us, you mm-hmm. know? And if you want to be one of us, just... No. We don't. Nobody says that around here. You're embarrassing me in front of the wizards, dude. Stop it.
Stop. Embarrass me in front of the wizards. Who's that from?
I don't know, but I love referencing that. I love that so much. This whole side tangent is marginally watered down when you learn that Vilka Fenrika is sometimes translated as the Wolves of Fenris.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
The planet named after Fenrir.
The Nordic god of the hunt, right?
Kind of. There's a lot that he has purview over. What that means, effectively, is they are the wolves of the giant wolf that will bring about Armageddon that dwells in the Fen. Which yes. means the chapter master, whose title is the Great Wolf, could be known as the Great Wolf of the Wolves of the Giant Wolves, who oversees the company of the champions of the Giant Wolf, who are all part and parcel with the other small groupings, such as the Blood Maws, the Sea Wolves, the Death Wolves, the Storm Wolves, the Iron Wolves, and the Fire Howlers.
They like their wolves.
It gets out of hand.
They really like their wolves.
And if you read a codex, it gets really out of hand. I mean, there yeah. are some of them, I wasn't joking, riding into battle on dire wolves.
To be fair, that's awesome.
Logan Grimnar has a sled like Santa that's pulled by dire wolves.
That's so awesome.
So hard, right? Like, I get it, they've committed to the bit, and it is one of the single biggest criticisms about the wolves, shut up, Thousand Sons fans, is that they overcommit to the bit. But my argument is, if it's a good bit, why not? I'm sorry, if I had a wolf the size of a warhorse, listen, I already like big dogs, huge German Shepherd fan, I had one growing up, I would have one again in a heartbeat, I'd have a Husky, I'd have a Labrador, if it was legal and I was competent enough, I'd do those wolf hybrid things that are like the size of, you know, the giant?
Yeah.
The mountain, you know yeah. the mountain, that guy, humongous dude on Game of Thrones, they're like the size of him when standing up, they're huge. And if it was A, legal, and B, I was skilled enough, I would have one. Love big dogs. To no end.
Buy yourself a Rhodesian Ridgeback. They hunt lions.
Oh, I would love to.
They it's hunt just, lions.
So it's such an off. It's a good bit. It's a good bit. Just commit to it. You
know? Honestly, my one criticism is they don't commit enough.
Oh, no.
Why isn't Grimnar's last name Grim Snarl?
Dude, you say they don't commit enough? We haven't even gotten to the part where...
It's a very aesthetic criticism. I wasn't being serious.
Okay, because I was going to say...
Although like, I do wish his name was Grimmsnarl. That'd be funny.
Their genes are literally spliced with something. Like, they've committed to the bit on a genetic level. Oh, no one else... Like, you open up a Ultramarine, and maybe their double helix is a bit more organized than it should be. But the Space Wolves have something different going on.
They have tax codes written into their DNA.
I wish the Ultramarines did. The Space Wolves have something straight out of Teen Wolf going on in there. Now, this is, disclaimer, this is not how it went down at all. This is how I envision it. It is purely a Powerpuff Girls situation where the Emperor is sitting over this vat and mixing sugar, spice, and everything nice. These were the ingredients chosen to create the perfect little warriors. But then he knocked over something called Chemical X. But instead of an X, it's like a vat with a golden retriever on it.
It's like... I was going to...
Did I get that? Hold on. Did I get that dialogue right?
Yes, you got it. You got it down pat.
I think I might
have. You got it perfect.
I mean, I abridged it there.
But it's been a while since I've seen Powerpuff Girls, but no, I think you got it right.
You can tell I was a Cartoon Network kid. I don't think I got the ending right, but I did get the beginning right. Regardless, that's definitely not how it happened, but it is a fact that they do have something in their DNA called a Canis Helix, and it's given to all of them.
I mean, how the hell else do they get the weird canines?
Precisely. They are very mean in recruitment because you will go to the Fang, and you know, there's usually... yes, I know. I thought you got it out of your system by this point.
I'm gonna just chortle every time you bring that up.
You will go to the Fang, and you will receive the beginnings of your gene seed, and every other Space Marine chapter, it's done in one go, bada bing, bada boom, moving on, right? You will drink that chalice, right? And then you'll black out. And then you'll wake up.
You are finally awake.
Yes, but alone.
Oh.
In the middle of the tundra.
Oh.
And you can feel your chest expanding, your bones cracking and giving way, your fangs getting longer, and your sense of smell and hearing increasing far beyond what you're used to. The wind blowing by is deafening to you. And the only thing that you know about how you got here is a little sticky note that's placed on your chest that goes, "See you with the fang," smiley face.
They definitely give you not a trial by fire, but a trial by ice.
It's horrific. But I was not joking. By the time you are coming to, you do feel your bones buckling and splitting as you are undergoing changes.
You are expanding.
And you want nothing more than to eat raw meat or drink blood, which is, you know, that's neat. You would think that, okay, well, all the flora and fauna of Fenris don't stand a chance against this augmented human rampaging through.
You're in the middle of the tundra in a blizzard. What flora or fauna?
I'm so glad you asked, because to get to the Fang, you have to get past blood lice, cave bear, drakes, fathom whales, Fenrisian elk, Fenrisian ice fiends, Fenrisian mammoths, Fenrisian wolves, frost mastodons, frost wolves, which are different from Fenrisian wolves, fire drakes, giants, giant yaks, great white bears, hoggerns, ice mammoths, ice trolls, ice worms, ice whales, a kraken, mastodons, mountain raptors, a rime spider, ripperfish, sea dragons, snowheart, spore bear, storm elk, underfangs, wendigore, wraith badgers, glacier worms, ice cobras, peak renders, razorhawks, rot specters, saber wolves, sea eagles, and snowblind geists.
I love how two of those were normal, like, animals that have existed, and the rest are just Skyrim enemies.
Yes!
Like, cave bear and saber-toothed tiger, and then everything else is a fantasy creature.
And you don't even know where the Fang is! You weren't awake for this! And you gotta get through all of that, and somehow, if you manage, there are other people here, too.
Yeah.
Because if you fail the test, you become this thing called the Wolfen, which is this fully feral hybrid creature. It's people who failed to tame that new bestial side that's been added forcibly, and now they just stalk the ice looking for other aspirants to eat.
And blasting animal I have become by 3 days' grace.
Yeah, pretty much. These guys don't have all the extra organs like the full-bore Marines do, but they're still scary.
Yeah.
Because... fun fact, by the way, you've been ditched out here without any of the organs that make this life easier. You make it back to the Fang, and that's when they go, "Ah, good for you, congratulations, you've earned the spare parts." And
now you can spit acid.
They throw the full parts bin at you, and you come out complete. But until then, you are this half-formed thing that is fighting basic urges, as well as super predators, all the way back home. It's rough. And even after you get the whole parts bin thrown at you, that urge never goes away. Because sometimes you will still turn into a wolf and just later into your career.
It can just still happen?
It's kind of like the Black Rage.
Ah, I see.
It can just happen. And it'll happen as you age, as you go through stressors. It's just a possibility as a space wolf, which is why the wolf priests... Yes, I know. That's why they're deployed, to watch over their brothers and to remind them to sit and stay should things start getting out of hand. You know, don't take it out on the couch. Sit. Good boy. Somebody has to.
No, stop. Just don't do it. Calm down.
Yeah, they tend to keep that wolfen thing pretty hush-hush. After all, twisting and deforming into different bestial versions of yourself is what chaos does. And nobody in the Imperium does that, guys. Come on. That's
impossible. We don't do that.
Never, ever.
It's only a chaos thing. Totally there's not a thing we no do.
No legion in the history of legions that is struggling with such a deep and dark secret. It's impossible, almost.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that's a true and truthful statement.
Yes. My favorite thing about it is, despite them being a shameful secret, that does not stop them from being used.
Of course.
And sometimes what will happen is, so you can imagine Wolfen deployed in the battlefield, it's whatever, it's like Wolverine ripping through stuff. Very effective. Sometimes Space Marines get wounded, though, and they get interred into dreadnoughts. For those of you who don't know, a dreadnought's like an ICU with like 5 RPGs strapped to it and a chainsaw.
It's an ICU if your ICU room had like 12 Sidewinder missiles attached to it.
Exactly. A dreadnought is a life support unit combined with a turbo weapon to just keep a soldier on the front line, because not even in death does duty end. That is a real thing that happens. Sometimes when a space wolf is in the dreadnought and is undergoing the stresses of being in a dreadnought, because it's very unpleasant. It's a waking undeath. No marine likes it.
I'd imagine it sucks.
Yeah. Sometimes their genes can begin to exhibit that failing, and they can become a wolfen stuck in a dreadnought.
I'd imagine that double sucks.
It really doesn't, because that means the space wolves have fully fieldable wolfen dreadnoughts with... the most well-known of them being called Murderfang.
Okay, that kind of goes hard.
Every single ranged weapon is ripped right off the dreadnought, and it's replaced with every single buzzsaw, axe, blade, electric thing that they have. And they are then given this blizzard shield, so they're even better at close quarters combat, and then they're just thrown forward.
Blizzard shield?
It's so cool! It is so... this is what
Blizzard
I mean.
Blizzard shield?
If the bit is good, commit to it. And this Blizzard is a good bit. Shield. Yeah, dreadnoughts are usually slow and lumbering, these towering figures that stomp across a battlefield. Wolfen dreadnoughts are disturbing to bear witness to.
Disturbing.
Because they'll be full bore sprinting, they'll be twitching, because their waists are kind of these geared servos. They can like full bore rotate like a blender. They're using every tool they have available. It is like the Tasmanian tiger running around. The Tasmanian devil running around.
Frightening.
When you see one, it's this weird twitching machination.
I mean...
and it's so much fun.
Because a space marine is already terrifying and uncanny to look at.
Mm-hmm. You want to know the worst thing about it, too? They will howl from within those dreadnoughts in an audible manner across the battlefield.
That's cool.
Oh, and... that's not even the half of it, because machines have spirits in 40K, and they take after their owner, meaning it can howl, and then you will hear every soul that thing has damned howling in unison with it.
That goes kind of hard.
Right?
That goes kind of hard.
Dude, and Murderfang is just one of them. There are, if things are really tough, they will send out a group called the Brothers Berserk. The triplets of boundless rage, and it's a set of three brothers who've all turned wolfen in dreadnoughts, and they're stuck in stasis, usually only thawed one at a time. But if things go bad enough, all three can be deployed, and they have...
Do they just drop them like nukes?
Cannon, no confirmed losses. If all three are there, it has always been a win.
They get the custodies treatment.
Yeah! Huh. It's like, the brothers Berserk are out, we know how this is gonna
go. This is gonna go. Yeah. Start filing the paperwork already, this is a dub.
And this is their more mortifying side. This is the terror that the wolves can inflict. And you can see why people like that. I'm sorry, a dreadnought spinning around full
like
force.
Like a blender?
Half of it doing the damage with the blade, the other half, this piece of rebar going through you. It's so cool!
I mean, they took the Sidewinder missiles off, but then they strapped an F-16 wing to you and said, this is a great sword.
I've seen pieces of art of them with them running like King Kong, like on all fours. It's so sketchy.
A dreadnought running on all four?
Yes! Do you see why people like this side of them?
These things aren't wolfen, they're silverbacks.
It's so scary. It's one of the most terrifying things that can be deployed. They don't have many of them because the right set of wrong things needs to happen to the right guy for you to get one of these. But when you do, oh boy.
Oh, keep that thing around.
It's so cool. Oh, it's unironically one of my favorite genuinely fieldable units. Kind of useless, but genuinely fieldable.
Kind of awesome.
It's so cool.
Useless, but awesome.
Oh my god, it brings a tear to the eye how cool it is.
He's literally crying.
A little. There is another way to show off how brutal they can be, though, and that is to look at what they did to Magnus. Because, look, I do not like throwing a battery of proper nouns at you. I've never been fond of it, and I've always found it kind of takes away from the story in a sense, which is why I don't tend to focus on battles too much. However, the burning of Prospero is one of those really important things.
It is the battle when it comes to the Space Wolves and Thousand Suns.
It's gonna be on the test.
Yeah.
It's like Istvan levels of important. It is one of those moments where, had this gone almost any other way, the whole heresy would be going a different direction. Maybe, probably for the better, honestly.
Yeah.
It's really important. We have not covered it at all.
We've touched on it.
Oh, no, not even close.
We know kind of, we know what happens.
Yeah, not even close, though.
I know how it starts.
We mentioned this in the Patreon episode because truly we've not touched on anything the wolves have been up to or the Thousand Suns, because they were off in their own corners of the galaxy during the heresy. They don't really bump into each other the way other Primarchs tend to bump into each other all the time. Like, Gilliman bumped into damn near everyone at some point in the heresy, so you'll get a good...
Because of course he did.
You will get a good viewing of what the 13th were up to, because, yeah, they were pretty much everywhere. There were so many of them. These guys, not as much. So the highlight reel is... And again, disclaimer, Thousand Sun fan, just skip this. It's not going to be good for you. I make no apologies. It will be slanderous, baby.
It's okay. When you get your own episode, it'll be slanderous against the Space Wolves.
You'll get the other side of it. What matters is, or hold on, now that they're gone, Magnus is a massive dork. He is a turbo nerd who thinks magic can and will solve all of his problems, every single one, despite the fact that the Emperor specifically forbade the stuff. Especially within Space Marine legions. The only way you can use psychic chicanery is to get to Costco and back. That's it. You can only use it for navigation. Anything more is a no-no, he says.
I mean, to be fair, if I could instant transmission to Costco and instant transmission back, that'd be awesome.
No, not even teleportation. Raw navigation.
Oh, that sucks.
That's all Magnus could use it for.
I have a GPS.
Sorry. He said, no psychers ever. Repeated it loudly, no psychers ever. And then looked Magnus in the eye and said, no psychers ever. It's in no uncertain terms what Magnus should not have done. And this is why I fully agree when people say Magnus did nothing wrong. He was told to do nothing. And he did that wrong. He is the strongest psyker in the entire galaxy, save for the Emperor. He's really high up there. And he is powerful enough to just passively alter his height whenever he wants to. This is a thing he does, by the way. You look at the Primarch height chart, Magnus is very consistently inconsistent.
Some people hearing that are weeping and gnashing.
Oh, yeah, because people like to know specifics in 40K. It is being a psychers who Magnus is on a fundamental level. It's like asking Russ to cook his food all the way through or to stop drinking. It's almost antithetical.
He likes it extra rare.
Exactly. It's almost antithetical to their very being. So he was always trying to find a way around it, per se. A way to prove, like, hey, I get it. Psychers are probably bad, but I can handle this, Dad. I can handle this. So he gets a vision of how the book is going to end. And he rushes to tell the Emperor, oh my god, there's a whole heresy. It's going to be like 50 books, and Horus is going to kill you. That's just what's going to happen. But Magnus, instead of doing what he was told to do, which is nothing, and sending a messenger, like normal people do, by the way, he decided, I know what I will do. I will show the Emperor the importance of psychers and my own personal skill. I will manifest my way there in 2 seconds flat and let him know immediately now that I know of the threat. So Magnus opens a door into the warp and shunts his soul into it, effectively walking all the way from his home to Earth in an instant, showing up in the Emperor's bedroom. Really cool stuff.
Astral projection.
Genuinely an impressive feat. Yeah. The fact that he managed to open that level of door in the warp, really difficult.
That's really cool.
Did not bother to shut it behind him.
Ah. Yep.
And he decided to walk in when the Emperor was putting the final touches on a very warp-sensitive project. And so he completely ruined that, as well as just opening a portal in the basement now that other people can walk through.
Awesome.
It is the equivalent of, no, Dad, let me handle the fireworks, I say, after using thermite to create a perfect me-sized hole in your garage door. It's cool, son. It's very impressive. Not many people could do that, but what am I supposed to do now?
Do you know how much a garage door costs? It's surprisingly expensive.
Oh, God, they're horrifically expensive. But you never replace them, so it kind of maths out, you know?
Until somebody blows a hole in yours with thermite.
As Magnus has done. Now, there are a couple of ways the scene shakes out, because 40K, inconsistent storytelling. Sometimes it is pure wrath as the Emperor casts him out. Other times it's more like just deep sorrow. Just this feeling of, I knew you would fuck this up somehow, and I really hoped you wouldn't. Regardless, however you wish to interpret it, what matters is that action is what damned him in the eyes of the Emperor. And he immediately sends Leman Russ to bring him back alive. Key word there. Alive. Now, the Emperor chose to send this message the normal way, via messenger. Horus gets the message first and tweaks it from capture the flag to team deathmatch. And so the wolves are coming. And okay, this is where it gets really messed up. And this is where I have to be very specific. Magnus is back at home realizing how stupid he was. I've jacked this up beyond belief. I've proven everything. I wasn't good enough. I wasn't worthy. Oh, God. I just need to sit here and wait for the punishment. Because he knows the punishment is coming.
It's okay, Dad. I'll ground myself.
Exactly. So he doesn't want his people to prepare for an invasion because he's expecting Dad to send someone to capture him. And so his whole ethos is, I'll make the capture as easy as possible to prove I've learned. So he actively disarms his planet. He sends people with this glass basically vials with orders, and he says, open these once you get halfway across the Milky Way. And then when he does, he opens the orders and he sees, I'm sorry, from Magnus, effectively. He never tells, he purposely shrouds, by the way, this shows how powerful Magnus is. His planet is full of people who can kind of see the future to some extent. He shrouds his planet in this energy that prevents them from doing that, so they can't see what's coming. He deliberately sabotages his own homeworld.
Just to show, I figured out I did something wrong. Mm-hmm. Just take me.
Their full fleet's gone. In this moment, it's really weird to see. But it's kind of a Primarch on the ledge accepting it. He knows what's coming, and it's, I deserve it, effectively.
Yeah, he's literally saying, yeah, I screwed up.
It's genuinely, it's not, oh, yeah, I've screwed up. No, he's expecting to be done after this, you know. He was expecting Russ is going to come, he's going to take me, I'm going to go to Dad, and that's probably going to be it. And he's accepted his own demise, and that's a very weird thing to see a Primarch do. Now, the miscommunication there, the reason I'm so specific is because he was expecting, you know, they come in, they grab him, they leave. Russ is coming in with a vengeance. Russ is coming in with problems to solve. He's coming in with murder on his mind.
I am going to get you.
Yes. And so he arrives on this defenseless planet and proceeds to saturation bomb it. First move. I told you, they're real brutal at times. And Magnus's planet was kind of the safe haven. Part of why it was so perfect for Magnus is it was a safe haven far from Earth, where basically the weirdos could congregate, from psychers to mutants. Cool thing. Downside is the Imperium views those people as rounding errors even more so than regular people. So Magnus, I mean, Lehman was given the full go-ahead and bombed it all. There was one population center left. That's the opening move.
One?
So I said this is important. And that's why if you can, if you understand this battle, you understand how brutal they can get. There's
one
place.
On a whole planet.
Yep.
One.
All because of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Psyker.
Jesus.
Yes. And that's just the beginning. After that, the wolves start taking refugee shelters deliberately and then herding them towards difficult battlements to take. And people are then forced with the choice of, do I fire through my neighbors, or do I wait for them to get to safety while the space wolves don't seem to care and they're firing right through them anyway? It is... The space wolves make a showing in this moment. There are whole battlements that cannot be manned anymore because every time somebody gets close to it, dead. And the pile is too high. It's immovable now.
There's a pile of corpses in front of the door to the battlement.
Yeah, yeah. And that, by the way, is discounting the fact that the wolves are arriving in such high numbers, it looks like dust being kicked up. And before the Thousand Sons can even figure out, whoa, what's going on? Why is Dad just weeping in the pyramid? And why are all these people here? Horus sent him with some spare Titans, too. Yeah! And Custodes show up, too. And Sisters of Silence! Oh, it's so bad.
They came for their throats.
Horus changed the orders to kill the Thousand Sons. And Lehman Russ grabbed everything he knew he would need to do that. This is that Viking fury at its finest.
Holy.
And this is not Russ ordering from some ship. He's in the thick of it.
He's on the front lines.
He is. I am not joking. There's a scene where he splits a marine in half with one axe swing. Another tries to bathe him in psychic fire, and he just parries it back at him. Yes, he's just... so scary. It's so cool, though.
Parries a psychic attack.
Yes, yes. And the whole time, Magnus is just pacing in his quarters, effectively going, hey, guys, stop fighting. They'll probably calm down after we stop fighting, guys. This is clearly a misunderstanding of some kind. Come on, guys. Please stop fighting. And the Thousand Sons, they've had enough of this. They've had enough of this. And so they start fighting back and ignoring orders from their own Primarch, which is a whole thing.
That's a whole, yeah.
Yes. They awaken their own Titan. It's this whole clash. There's a lot I like about it. But the only thing I really feel that is worth mentioning here is the difference between the Thousand Sons and the Space Wolves. Because the Thousand Sons, there's this scene where one of them looks into the battlefield and sees because they can see the future, sees the direct firing arc he needs to take to take the dome clean off of a Space Wolf, but hesitates. He's never shot one of his brothers before. Ever. Yeah. I've only ever shot at the other. That guy looks just like me. Okay, yeah, his teeth are pointier, but that guy's built just like I am. And it's genuinely off-putting to him.
That's like my cousin.
And he dies for that hesitation, as the wolf does not show it back.
Huh.
Yeah.
They walked in with hate in their souls.
If you see a wolf pack hunt in real life, it's very mean. It is, and that's what they're representing in this moment. It is very much so, I have gotten the weak one, and now we are going to kill it and move on, and kill it and move on, until we have eaten enough. And the problem is, these wolves are not here to eat. They were here to desecrate. It's so bad that they just start unleashing the Wolfen left, right, and center, and it is at this point that Magnus has enough. And it's a wolf video. It's a wolf video. But I cannot sideline Magnus this hard because he has the best entrance of any Primarch ever for anything. That's not... How do you think he comes out of his pyramid?
I assume Egyptian god style. He's got the big... No, that's after he gets the chaos corruption. Big pillar of light appears from the top of pyramid. Big pillar of light appears directly in Leman Russ. And he's just like... apparates out of big pillar of light, JoJo posing at him.
Oh, you're close, but it's so much cooler. I have to give Magnus his flowers for this. He descends from the pyramid with waves of fire and lightning. And as he's doing this, he's looking at different battle lines, and they're just washing away. It is very much so he looks in your direction, fire consumes you, you're gone. Another direction, lightning takes you. Another tsunami washes you away. And as he's doing this, you look to the sky, and the heavens are buckling under the weight of Magnus's fury, and they're cracking, and it, out into reality is the true raw warp leaking in.
Hold on.
Yes.
Powerful enough to just crack a hole into the warp and right there?
And as it gets worse and worse, you see thousands of eyes staring upon the battlefield.
Because of course you do.
And if you make eye contact with any one of them, you immediately go insane. And he's not done descending the pyramid yet, by the way, because with his last steps, he raises his hand and, I kid you not, this is the stuff of the WWE, creates a lightning cage around him and Russ and proceeds to duke it out with him.
He goes into
a... It's a Hell in the Cell pay-per-view match.
My God.
And at this point, there's so much psychic chicanery going on that they both appear, these massive titans just duking it out in this field that nobody else can enter. It's so cool. And that's how the fight begins. That was Magnus's first move.
It's not over from here.
No.
Him activating a Mordekaiser ult is not the end.
Yeah. I love to make fun of Magnus. I do. But that's from a place of love. Because you see stuff like that. Nobody else does it like him. Nobody else has a flair for the dramatic like him.
No one's going to crack a hole into hell.
Yes. Yes.
And have that be the backdrop.
It was just the scenery. It was just the scenery. this, however, does not change much of how this goes down. At the end of the day, it's a thorough victory for the Wolves. And it's a victory in a way that feels worse than most Marines, because most Marines feel like a grizzly bear is bearing down upon you. This is unfair. This is a baby grand piano with teeth. I don't stand much of a chance. Even if I run downhill, that baby grand piano is on greased wheels. It's going to catch me. With the Wolves, it's very much so that same feeling of I'm materially outclassed in every way. Why is he biting at my heels? Why is he making it so I can't run and I don't stand any chance? I didn't anyway. Like, think about it. One population center as the opening move, and they were still herding refugees towards the battlements.
They were still getting mean with it.
Yeah. And that's the Wolves at their most vicious. That's them at the height of murder, ransack, and pillage. The rest of the Heresy shakes out like it does. Magnus gets hit with a backbreaker. Leman Russ disappears. Tons and tons of Wolves die, but that's par for the course for every single Legion.
Every single Legion seems to take losses in this.
Yeah. It is rough for them in particular. Not because they took so many losses up front, but because A, you've seen their recruitment process. It's the stuff that Space Wolves go through to become recruits is the stuff that would make you a veteran in some other chapters. I mean, really high bar for entry.
Think about the Ultramarines. They'd like stamp those out.
There's a factory out there There's a factory churning those guys out.
There's a Factorio factory just making nothing but space marines.
And then on top of that, even if you do pass it, you can go for the gene seed, which is the final step, and you discover that it's incompatible with you and you die. Because their gene seed has some Petco in it. So it's genuinely fairly rough on them to replenish after the heresy. They do not have many numbers. And that's why when Gilliman did the whole, we shall split every legion up thing, it didn't really affect them too much.
They had like one or two, maybe?
They were always fairly semi-independent. And so it was okay. There's not that many of them anyhow. Gilliman didn't have to look directly in that direction. Their numbers are also thinned because while Dad is gone for milk, Magnus is still around. And he has a hell of a memory. He constantly shows up on their homeworld, very mad about what they did to his. In the intervening time between the heresy and the modern kinder wolves, this is the bridge between how we get there. Magnus has a showing. I know it's a wolf video. I know it's a wolf video, but I have to put respect on Magnus's name for capturing wolves on their homeworld and sacrificing them slowly over the course of 9 hours, 9 minutes, and 9 seconds to summon himself onto the planet, at which point when he arrives, the whole world seems to react violently to his very presence being there. I'm talking the crust cracking and heaving. And that's just from him arriving. And his first move is to look at the sky and see the ships orbiting above and then drag them down with his psychic might.
He does a full Star Wars The Force Unleashed?
Until they're right into the atmosphere and then detonates them as dirty bombs. This is mid-fight, by the way. He's slaughtering wolves and passively doing this.
Huh.
Magnus is so strong.
My God.
Do you see why I bully him? When Magnus puts his back into something, it's so scary. It's so horrifyingly scary. So you can see why there's not many wolves left. They've always managed to beat him back, but it has never been for free. Especially when you consider that the second time Magnus showed up, which is the time when he's bringing ships down from orbit and detonating them inches above your head, the wolves took a deep breath, helped every civilian evacuate from the planet that was now cracking and heaving and crumbling. What was once safe is now sinking into the ocean, so that needs to be dealt with. And then they proceed to charge directly into the 13th Black Crusade.
They went directly from being the cause of the pain to, oh my God, give him a break.
Yeah, yeah. And in between that too, never forget, whenever Magnus shows up, it's a loss on an incomprehensible level.
It's planet cracking.
Not just that. There are some Primarchs who can show up in, like, Kansas City, and you wouldn't know it if you're living in Canada. Right. There's not that much of an impact. Yeah. Gilliman shows up somewhere. He's showing up in an S-class and stepping outside. There's no real effects to it, right? It's just he who saw him, he who didn't, right? Lorgar arrives like a televangelist on a private jet, right? He who saw him, he who didn't.
But a jet.
Yeah, I love that. I love that guy.
Cash.
I bought a jet. Cash. I bought a boat. Cash. Televangelists are a whole thing. They're a whole thing, man. there's a reason I compare Lorgar to them. At their worst, let me be specific. Televangelists at their worst. But Magnus, when he arrives, is a spectacle. If you are even on a neighboring planet, you'll know Magnus is here. That's a lot of witnesses.
Yeah.
That the Imperium cannot tolerate.
Yo. So now the loss is doubled down because...
You are not allowed to know about the traitor Primarchs. You're not allowed to know that they fell to chaos. You're not allowed to know that they are around, that there are more bad Primarchs than we have good ones. Yeah.
So for every kill that Magnus gets, the Imperium needs to match them.
Yep. Usually at a higher level.
Huh. Damn.
This effect that the traitors have is part of how the Space Wolves got... The best showing they've ever had, this is the other shoe dropping when they're super kind. It's this thing called the Months of Shame. Like I said, Space Wolves have it pretty rough. They were on Armageddon. Enough said. Angron was there. And because of that, people bore witness to Angron. Therefore, they must be killed. Usual standard issue song and dance. The problem is, you had an Inquisitor who was a bit too proactive, let's say. And so the usual routine is kill everyone who saw it, move on, right? But he would start killing troop transports that were in the general vicinity. And this isn't Magnus. It's Angron just shouting in a corner, you know?
Yeah.
They clearly didn't know about him, but he would just shoot troop transports as they arrived. And this kept happening over and over and over again. And the wolves, who had fought side by side with some of these people the wolves knew were nowhere near close enough to even bear witness to Angron, let alone fully comprehend what's happening, they got sick of it. And so they started advocating for the people, and that didn't work, because come on.
Of course not.
Come on. Inquisitors negotiating, really.
No, it's not happening.
They started doing positioning their ships in escort formation around just regular civilian ships as they got out. And because Inquisitors have a ton of authority, and Inquisitors are almost above reproach, they just opened fire on them. And you want to know the thing that makes the Space Wolves so cool in that moment? They just firm it. They are fully fired on as enemies of the Imperium multiple times by the weapons on an Inquisitor's ship, which are not lacking. And they still just calmly escorted them out. And they did not fire a shot back, because they knew if they did, the Inquisitor would go, "Ha, see, they're traitors, I told you." And then it's a whole bigger problem. And this happens for months. And because of their efforts, a lot of people are able to leave the planet and are saved. Inquisitors do not lose, is the problem with that. And so, okay, fine. They have left that planet. They've made it onto a new planet. Good for you. Congratulations. Exterminate them all.
Oh.
And so they just start exterminating planets where one guy may have landed. He didn't even have time to unpack his bags and say hi. Just bright flash of light, gone. And that is the tipping point for the wolves. And this is what kind of breaks it into a full-fledged war against the Inquisition and the Grey Knights.
They went to war against the Grey Knights?
Yep.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they win. They do win at the end of it. The Months of Shame are their own video. But they show a level of heroism that is not seen by many other legions at all. And the whole time they are fighting not for themselves, but for the civilians who are behind them. Which is a massive deal for the people who just ransacked Prospero, I don't know, like 5,000 years ago. It's a huge deal. End of the day, they do win. If I remember correctly, they win and outright kill an Inquisitor Lord, which is a whole thing, by bypassing his bodyguard, which is a named and known Grey Knight who beat Angron.
How did they do that?
Space Wolves are very competent.
How did they do that?
Space Wolves are very competent.
Okay.
Space Wolves are hilariously competent. And they didn't kill the Grey Knight either. They did keep him alive. But, yeah.
Well, that makes it more impressive.
Yeah, they just bypassed him.
Did they Solid Snake hit him with CQC and then move on?
I'm fairly certain it's just Duck Axe the Human. Because Inquisitors are normal people. They cannot take a blow from a Space Marine. It really... You know, when you think about it, logistically, it's not that impressive, but it is still...
They probably just had one distracting the Grey Knight and another came around.
The impressive thing is getting that far aboard.
Yeah.
And so it is very odd. And do you see what I mean when I say that there's almost two variants of the wolves?
Yeah, it's like it's there inside them there are two wolves.
Sure. Sure, whatever. One is this super sketchy black hound baying in the distance, and there's a silvered one that is just border... It's just Silver Age Superman. That's the stuff they get up to nowadays.
Yeah.
They help the civilians rebuild after the Months of Shame, manage to rebuild their own world after Magnus. After Magnus. And then ran right into the 13th Black Crusade. All to of help
this,
there.
All of
they
this,
didn't need to.
all of this out of pure selflessness.
They literally did not need to. They did not have the numbers to really make much of a difference.
No, absolutely not.
They still showed up for their brothers and for regular common people. Because at the time, it wasn't well known what Cadia was exactly. It was just...
It's Cadia.
It was a big thing, and they still showed up to help. And unlike other Marines who are very... look, Space Marines are cool. They're so cool, we decided to release Space Marines 2, the sequel. It's very fun. We think you'd like it. A lot of Marines hate the sequel. They think the original is the best thing ever. They don't.
They don't hate Space Marines 2?
They do, but their perspective is from, you have not gone through what we have gone through on Fenris.
Mm.
You know? And so what will usually happen is a new recruit will show up and they'll go, okay, now go survive the walk to the Fang. And then if they make it, welcome aboard, welcome. Let's teach you the ways. They get you up to speed, you know? And so they're very opening and welcome once you prove yourself. But until then, it's a pretty frigid thing. And this is where we get those scenes where they're talking and the new Marines, the Space Marine Squared, show up. And they're like, hey, I'm excited to be a Space Wolf. And they're like, hey, we don't call ourselves that here. And they go through very deliberate lengths to catch them up, not just on their combat doctrine, but their culture. Like, hey, this is what living on Fenris means. This is why we do what we do. This is why we eat what we eat and drink what we drink. And, like, they'll have drinking and eating contests with them where, like, they know that these new guys are going to lose, but I want to see how hard they lose. You know?
How far
like,
can
like,
we get?
How much gumption do you have is effectively the check here.
How much can you tolerate losing?
And not even that. It's just like, what is the gap going on here?
Mm.
But those are the two ways they tend to exhibit themselves. Sure. Do they overcommit to the bit? Yeah, that could be argued.
I think the commitment to the bit's awesome.
Sure. Do they sometimes feel like Mary Sue's? Yeah, a little bit. But I'll debate that. What Space Marine doesn't in their own novel, right? All of them feel overtly strong whenever they're the topic of the novel, right? And sure, are they hilariously, inconsistently mischaracterized? Yeah. But does not stop them from being very, very enjoyable. And, I mean, to this day, they are very kind to their wolfen. Not killing their wolfen, which is a kindness in the Imperium. It's a whole thing. And this is kind of just the tip of the iceberg for them. I'm not joking. I had a really rough time figuring out how exactly to do this video, so I decided to experiment and get a little bit more detailed on a battle and a couple of factors to see how you guys like it. But yeah, there's a lot I left off the table. They have Mr. Freeze-style weaponry. They have a whole age-based rank system. There's a lot I did not mention. The wolves could easily be a two-hour episode. They really could.
I mean, what's our time stamp at now?
About like an hour or so. An hour and some change.
Yeah.
They could easily have doubled the length of this. I didn't mention their current chapter master, how cool he is. I mean, we did mention on Patreon the guy they keep on ice only when they... I did mention on Patreon the guy they keep on ice only to thaw out for the most brodacious of occasions. Like,
and when you need Grandpa to tell some stories.
That's the most brodacious of occasions. When Grandpa's around, there is a staggering amount to the Space Wolves. Enough that they make it a second episode at some point, probably.
Yeah.
Or I'll roll it into a Leman Russ episode, but who knows? What matters is...
I mean, it does make sense, because every other Legion that we've, like, talked about has been very meshed together.
I've been able to cheat on a lot
You've
of
You've been
them
able to cheat a little bit, because it's just like, as we're going about this,
You can pick up a little bit there.
Yeah, you have some preconceived knowledge that's just like...
Mm-hmm.
Here you go. We can start on this basis and work up. Mm-hmm. But the Space Wolves are so... They're doing their own thing.
And, I mean, you look at the tin for the Space Wolves, and yeah, it does exactly what the tin says. But once you open it, you're surprised. Huh. These chocolate chip cookies have some salt on them. And it adds quite a bit of flavor.
Yeah.
And so that's how I feel about the wolves. Or you see them, and it's Space Vikings. And by the end of this video, you're still in the same mind. Space Vikings. But now you know about Murder Fang.
No, I was thinking it's more like that one river in England that's like...
The most lethal thing I've ever seen.
It's like...
The straight line down.
It's like a foot and a half wide. It's like as wide as this weird section of our desk.
Mm-hmm. But like 30 feet deep.
It's like 30 feet deep.
And flowing fast. You will die if you step in that. It's rough.
That's
how
Space
Wolves operate. As always, thank you so much for watching this episode. You may... No! definitely, when I do it, I promise you, when I do a Thousand Suns episode, you will get the Thousand Suns take on Prospero and even more hype for Magnus because, oh my God, it's so cool. Yes, he gets his back broken at the end of it and loses it, like, but he's so cool.
That entrance was so cool.
The Hell in the Cell lightning ring?
Awesome.
Dude.
Awesome. What are the Primarchs going to do that?
Right. The only problem is, like Mankind, he got thrown off the top by Lehman Russ. It's a very specific reference. Only five people watch the WWE are going to get. But if you do, yeah, you're gonna like that. But yeah, thank you so much for watching. And for those of you who are very observant, you will notice there's a new guy up on the Ultra Shelf.
I was going to say, before we leave, let us acknowledge one of our
Hold on. Okay, you can tell I have a favorite Legion because I have to put the Ultra mug behind the Ultra model. I have my biases, but a big thank you to Jack for sending this in, one of our patrons and a longtime fan. He knows, I've said this 101 times, this is my favorite model of them all. I, however, have never bought it because I do not have the skill to paint this. I know my limits. I'm good at a lot of things. This ain't it. However, he has taken it upon himself too, so kindly send this my way, and I am infinitely grateful for it. And mortified about how I'm going to paint this.
Not only did they send us this wonderful Gilliman model, but they did mention, and they sent us a little note.
Mm-hmm. They didn't just get me; they got you too.
They got me too. Mm-hmm. It fell over. But they mentioned that they ended themselves up in the same city and same game shop as the Robert Rath, and so. Now, on what looks to be, like, custom stationery
that
Mr. Rath had for himself, there is now an autographed sticker, bookmark, something from Robert Rath himself. And I think I have a good place for this. I'm not sure I want, because it's a sticker, I was thinking about putting it on the inside cover of my... copy of The Infinite and the Divine, but like I have always been iffy about very, very important stickers, so I'm like, maybe I'll just keep it up here. I don't know what I want to do with it, but this is kind of awesome.
Oh, it's beyond awesome. It's beyond awesome.
It's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. It's moral of the story. You guys are all fantastic, each and every one of you. And thank you especially to Jack who sent this stuff in.
These very, very thoughtful gifts.
Do appreciate you all so very much. Thank you, as always, for watching. Thank you to all of the names that are going to be scrolling by.
Probably or are already
scrolling by. And thank you, as always, for being you. We will see you next week for the Gene Stealers or Abaddon or the Aspect Warriors. You decide.
Not Space Wolves Part 2?
No.
Not Space Wolves Part 2? The Furining?
The Thousand Suns are already on watch, dude. Oh. They couldn't take another one.
I mean, it could just be like an hour of Space Wolves slander, where it's just like a furry art compilation.
Oh, don't worry. They'll get their own. They will get their own in the Thousand Suns episode. They will. But until then, they stay winning. Thank you again, and thank you for being you.